His head was sagging and lolling, and he looked up and he saw this gun right near him. So he reached up and grabbed the gun, and he pulled it right down. And then the struggle ensued. And he pulled this fellow down to eventually to the floor. And the banjo player came up with his banjo, and he brought it up over his head and banged it down on the guy's head. And it broke the drum of the banjo right off. So the stick of the banjo, the drummer had this expression, oh my gosh, what have I done? What have I done to my banjo, beautiful banjo? Because the stick was up this way, and the drum was hanging on by the strings down below, you know. And so, and then they began to pummel the guy with beer bottles. And it was a gruesome sight. I could see, standing right close by, they hit him with a bottle, it would break, and the blood would fountain out of his head, you know. And then they began to shout about someone down on the curb. Sure enough, they began to get up near the window and begin to fire beer bottles down on the curb. Someone on the curb was holding the crowd back. Well, geez, I was pretty alarmed because I was thinking about my career, you know, if I got caught or thrown in jail or something, I'd get kicked out of Pratt. So anyways, I crowded myself down the hall. The hall was jammed full of screaming women. I crowded myself down. I got to the door, and I looked out, and there was another gangster out there lying in the gutter, and there was a pool of blood around him, and they were still bombarding him with beer bottles. And so I cut out, and just as I got around the corner, the police were coming. I just barely made it, you know. Well, anyways, I get up in the morning, and I could hear them crying over on the main street there. I could hear them yelling, "Mobsters, gang, mobsters kill gangsters. Mobsters kill gangsters." And that was the headline that had come screaming out across the paper, you know. And two of them had died.
So you saw a pretty life in the raw there, didn't you?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Were you able, you continued at Pratt, though, through 1934, I believe. So yes. You took a series of courses. What were some of the later courses you took at Pratt?
Well, I can't quite remember the sequence, but I think that what we gradually did, we grew out of the drawing stage into the painting stage. Mm-hmm. And I do remember... I do remember an oil painting class that was conducted by Mr. Simeotti, and advanced watercolor class by Mr. Starkweather, who was a famous English watercolorist. Mm-hmm. And then...
they were both good teachers, were they?
Excellent teachers. Mm-hmm. I remember one incident in the watercolor class. I had a buddy sitting beside me who was a class clown, and he was always doing such outrageous and silly things, and kept half the class in stitches, you know, his mutterings and his sayings and his performance. And so Mr. Starkweather, he had a strange way of teaching that we think is strange in terms of modern education, because he would go from one person to another and sit down and paint on their painting, you know. Well, it was a pretty great method, because you see how the expert could handle that difficult medium, you know. So he came to this Schwartz, and he said, "Well, Mr. Schwartz, I see you've been very busy." He is Englishman, you know. And Mr. Schwartz was beaming, yes, you know, smiling to all his friends. And he said, "Mr. Schwartz, would you please stand up?" And so he said, "Now I'd like to have you hold your watercolor in one hand, like this." And he held it. He said, "Now let me take your other hand." And he took his other hand and he doubled it into a fist. He said, "Now, Mr. Schwartz, you put your fist right through that watercolor." Bang! And he made him do it, you know.
That thing. Shamed him right there.
He never bothered it again in that sense, I don't think.